This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
The second hour of the Cincinnati Enquirer on Mondays is brought to you through generous underwriting from the Northeastern Lions Club.
My name's Dick Dowd, and I'll be reading to you from the pages of the Cincinnati Enquirer. We'll be doing the second hour, which will include TV listings, obituaries and death notices, horoscopes, people, what to watch, celebrity birthdays, Carolyn Hacks, and some great news articles for you. But we're going to start out with the TV listings, as we always do on this Monday morning. We'll start with WLWT NBC Channel 5. And from 2 to 3 p.m. will be Sherry. 3 to 4 p.m. Jennifer Hudson. 4 to 7:30, 3.5 hours of regional news, followed by Access Hollywood from 7:30 to 8. The Voice from The Voice, the playoffs, Reba McEntire and Chance and others. That'll go from 8 to 10 p.m. Deal or No Deal from 10 to 11 p.m. And WLWT News, a half hour of regional news between 11 and 11:30. And The Tonight Show takes us from 11:30 on into Tuesday morning. Next, we've got WCPO ABC Channel 5 here in Cincinnati. From 2 to 3 p.m., it'll be General Hospital. The Kelly Clarkson Show from 3 to 4 p.m. From 4 to 7:30, 3.5 hours of regional news, followed by Extra from 7:30 to 8. American Idol from 8 to 10 p.m. Then the Interrogation Tapes from 10 to 11 p.m. A half hour of regional news on WCPO Channel 9 from 11 to 11:30. And Jimmy Kimmel takes us from 11:30 on into Tuesday morning. Next, we've got WKRC CBS Channel 12 here in Cincinnati. The Talk from 2 to 3 p.m. Dateline 3 to 4 p.m. Local 12 news at 4 p.m. That takes us from 4 to 7 p.m. 3 hours of regional news. Inside Edition from 7 to 7:30. Entertainment Tonight from 7:30 to 8. The Neighbors from 8 to 8:30. Bob Hart's Abishola from 8:30 to 9. NCIS from 9 to 10 p.m. And then NCIS Hawaii from 10 to 11 p.m. Local news, half hour of regional news between 11 and 11:30 p.m. And The Late Show takes us from 11:30 on into Tuesday morning. Next, we've got CINCW Channel 12.2. And from 2 to 2:30, it's equal. Oh, we got two half-hour episodes of equal between 2 and 3 p.m. Jerry Springer has his own hour between 3 and 4 p.m. Paternity between 4 and 5 p.m., two half-hour episodes. Justice, 5 to 6 p.m., two half-hour episodes of Justice. And Neighbor, 6 to 7 p.m., two half-hour episodes of Neighbor. Family Feud from 7 to 7:30, and a second Family Feud from 7:30 to 8. All American, 8 to 9 p.m., Whose Line Is It Anyway? From 9 to 10 p.m. The National Desk finishes out the day from 10 p.m. to midnight, 2 one-hour episodes of The National Desk. Next, we have WXIX Fox Channel 19. And from 2 to 3 p.m., it's 2 half-hour episodes of Judge Judy. And from 3 to 7 p.m., 4 hours of regional news on Fox 19. Wheel of Fortune from 7 to 7:30 and Jeopardy 7:30 to 8. Master Chef Junior from 8 to 9 p.m. So You Think You Can Dance from 9 to 10 p.m. Fox 19 now at 10 p.m. 90 minutes of regional news between 10 and 11:30. And from 11:30 on into Tuesday, Bengals. So we'll have a little football for you there late at night. Next, we have WCET PBS Channel 48, Antique Roadshow from 2 to 3 p.m., Cobra 3 to 4 p.m., Finding Your Roots 4 to 5 p.m., Prehistoric Road Tip 5 to 6 p.m., BBC News from 6 to 6:30, and The Day from 6:30 to 7 p.m. The PBS NewsHour from 7 to 8 p.m. Antique Roadshow from 8 to 10 p.m. Two one-hour episodes of Antique Roadshow between 8 and 10 p.m. Lydia Celebrates America from 10 to 11 p.m. And Amanpour and Company finishes out the day between 11 p.m. and midnight. Next, we have MyNet 64. Karamo has his own hour from 2 to 3 p.m. And Maury has his own hour from 3 to 4 p.m. The Steve Wilkos Show is from 4 to 5 p.m. Person, 5 to 5:30. Family Feud, 3 half-hour episodes of Family Feud between 5:30 and 7 p.m. Big Bang Theory, 7 to 7:30. Young Sheldon, 7:30 to 8. Law and Order, 8 to 9 p.m. And a second Law and Order from 9 to 10 p.m. Local News from 10 to 10:30. Big Bang Theory, 10:30 to 11 p.m. Young Sheldon, 11 to 11:30 p.m. And Two and a Half Men, 11:30 to midnight. Now we're going to go up to Dayton here. And we start with NBC Channel 2 in Dayton, Ohio. Pictionary from 2 to 2:30. Jeopardy, 2:30 to 3 p.m. Dateline, 3 to 4 p.m. First at 4 from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Inside Edition, 7 to 7:30. Jeopardy, 7:30 to 8. The Voice, the playoffs, from 8 to 10 p.m. Deal or No Deal Island from 10 to 11 p.m. Regional News from 11 to 11:30. And The Tonight Show from 11:30 on into Tuesday morning. Next, we've got CBS Channel 7, again up there in Dayton, Ohio. The Talk from 2 to 3 p.m. Let's Make a Deal from 3 to 4 p.m. 48 Hours from 4 to 5 p.m. News from 5 to 6:30, 90 minutes of regional news chopped into 3 half-hour segments. CBS World and CBS National and Global News from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Wheel of Fortune, 7 to 7:30. E.T., 7:30 to 8. Neighbor, 8 to 8:30. Bob Hart's Abishola from 8:30 to 9 p.m. NCIS from 9 to 10 p.m. And NCIS Hawaii from 10 to 11 p.m. Regional News from 11 to 11:30. And The Late Show from 11:30 on into Tuesday morning. PBS Channel 14. Knit, 2 to 2:30. Cooking, 2:30 to 3. Guilt, 3 to 4 p.m. Eleanor, 4 to 4:30. And Wildcrats, 4:30 to 5. Daniel, 5 to 5:30. Rosie's, 5:30 to 6. Work It Out, 6 to 6:30. And Donkey, 6:30 to 7. DW News from 7 to 7:30. And Regional News from 7:30 to 8. Earth's Great Seasons from 8 to 9 p.m. Europe, from 9 to 10 p.m. Stephen Fry in Central America between 10 and 11 p.m. BBC World from 11 to 11:30. And DW News brings us from 11:30 to midnight. Now we got PBS Channel 16. And from 2 to 2:30 is George. 2:30 to 3 is Ask. Luna and Sophia between 3 and 4 p.m. Finding Your Roots between 4 and 4:30. Prehistoric Road Trip between 5 and 6 p.m. The PBS News Hour between 6 and 7 p.m. My Music, Burt Bacharach, will be from 7 to 9 p.m. And My Music, 60s Pop Rock, will be from 8. I guess Burt's just an hour from 7 to 8 p.m. My Music, 8 to 10 p.m. Concrete from 10 to 11 p.m. and Love Inevitably from 11 p.m. on into Tuesday morning. Next, we got ABC Channel 22. General Hospital between 2 and 3 p.m. Barrymore, 2 half-hour episodes of Barrymore between 2 and 3 p.m. The Kelly Clarkson Show from 4 to 5 p.m. Judge Judy, 2 half-hour episodes from 5 to 6 p.m. and 2 half-hour episodes of regional news between 6 and 7 p.m. ABC 22 continues with Family Feud, 2 half-hour episodes between 7 and 8 p.m. American Idol between 8 and 10 p.m., The Interrogation from 10 to 11 p.m., Regional News from 11 to 11:30, and Jimmy Kimmel from 11:30 on into Tuesday. Next, we've got Fox 22.2, Judge Mathis from 2 to 3 p.m., Maury, 3 to 4 p.m. is Maury. 4 to 5 p.m., the Steve Wilkos Show. 5 to 5:30 is Person. And 5:30 to 6:30 is 2 half-hour episodes of Family Feud, followed by Regional News from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Big Bang Theory, 7 to 7:30, and another Big Bang from 7:30 to 8. MasterChef Junior from 8 to 9 p.m. And So You Think You Can Dance from 9 to 10 p.m. Regional News again from 10 to 11 p.m. Crime, 11 to 11:30, and Family Feud, 11:30 on into midnight. Next, we got CW26. Karamo from 2 to 3 p.m. Jennifer Hudson, 3 to 4 p.m. 2 half-hour episodes of Mom between 4 and 5 p.m. 2 half-hour episodes of Housewife between 5 and 6 p.m. And The Goldbergs, 2 half-hour episodes of The Goldbergs from 6 to 7 p.m. Young, coming down here from 7 to 7:30, Young Sheldon and a second Young Sheldon from 7:30 to 8. All American, 8 to 9 p.m. Whose Line Is It Anyway? From 9 to 10 p.m. Regional News from 11 to midnight to 10 to 11. Let's make it from 10 to 11 p.m. in 2 half-hour segments. Friends from 11 to 11:30 and a second Friends takes us from 11:30 on into midnight. And all you bingers, pay attention here. We got Ion 43. Criminal Minds, 5 1-hour episodes of Criminal Minds between 2 and 7 p.m. And then 5 1-hour episodes of FBI from 7 p.m. to midnight. Finally, we got PBS Channel 54. Nature Cat from 2 to 2:30. Arthur, 2:30 to 3. Baking, 3 to 3:30. And House, 3:30 to 4 p.m. Various programs between 4 and 5 p.m. Finding Your Roots, 5 to 6 p.m. BBC News, 6 to 6:30 in Kentucky, 6:30 to 7 p.m. The PBS News Hour from 7 to 8 p.m. Kids versus Screens, 8 to 9 p.m. Lydia Celebrates America between 9 and 10 p.m. And a second Lydia Celebrates America between 10 and 11 p.m. Amanpour from 11 to 11:30. And then Regional News from 11:30 on into Tuesday. And that's all the time that's all we have for the TV listings for the Cincinnati and the Dayton areas. But we're going to move along here. This Etc. page, always a fun hour here. And on the people side of the Etc. page, Swift beats Beatles in race to 12th UK number one album. Taylor Swift topped the British music charts on Friday with The Tortured Poets Department, outselling the rest of the top 10 combined and beating the Beatles for the second for the record of fastest artist to rack up 12 UK number one albums. Poets delivered the biggest album opening week in the United Kingdom in 7 years, and Swift now ties Madonna for female artists with the most UK number one albums in official album chart history. No other artist has notched up 12 number one albums in such a short space of time. Taylor Swift has done it in 11 years and 6 months. The official charts company said this surpasses the Beatles, who managed the feat in 14 years and 1 month. And morning host Harlow leaves CNN. Poppy Harlow is parting ways with CNN after nearly 2 decades. In an Instagram caption on Friday, Harlow addressed the exit briefly, writing, "I love every moment at CNN," with a series of photos, including a quote from network founder Ted Turner. The morning show host first joined CNN in 2008, and most recently hosted CNN This Morning, the brainchild of former CNN chief Chris Licht. When new CNN chief Mark Thompson announced programming shifts in February, he called Harlow and Phil Mattingly huge stars and said the network would find new roles for the co-hosts. According to an article by CNN journalist Oliver Darcy about the exit, the fall lineup shifts left Harlow without... The fall lineup shift left with Harlow without an anchor spot. And tape trafficking trial can start. The trial of internet personality Andrew Tate on human trafficking charges can go ahead. A Romanian court ruled on Friday, 10 months after he was first indicted, although his representative said he would challenge this decision. And Tate was indicted in June along with his brother Tristan and two Romanian female suspects on charges of human trafficking, rape, and forming a criminal gang to sexually exploit women, allegations they have denied. So we'll move over here to celebrity birthdays. And if today is your birthday, happy birthday to you. But today's birthday's musician Willie Nelson turns 91. Conductor Zubin Mehta is 88. Singer Dwayne Allen of the Oak Ridge Boys is 81. Singer Tommy James of Tommy James and the Shondells is 77. Director Philip Noyce, 74. Comedian actor Jerry Seinfeld is 70. Actor Kate Mulgrew is 69. Actor Daniel Day-Lewis is 67. Actor Michelle Pfeiffer is 66. Actor Eve Plum, 66. Singer Carney Wilson is 56. Actor Paul Adelstein is 55. Actor Uma Thurman is 54. Rapper Master P is 54. Actor Darby Stanchfield is 53. Singer Erica Campbell is 52. Guitarist Mike Hogan of the Cranberries is 51. Actor Tyler Labine is 46. Actor Megan Boone is 41. And actor Xochitl Gomez is 18. We've got What to Watch on TV. And that's going to include The Brokenwood Mysteries on Acorn TV. It's a season premiere. The 10th anniversary season of this New Zealand mystery series sees detectives Mike Shepard, played by Neil Ray, and Kristen Sims, played by Fern Sutherland, and Daniel Chambers, played by Jared Rawiri, continue to wrestle with the alarming murder rate in the small town of Brokenwood on New Zealand's North Island. And MasterChef Junior, Fox tonight at 8 p.m., the five remaining chefs are tasked with taking the first dish they made on MasterChef Junior and turning it into an elegant and electrifying version. And The Voice, NBC, 8 p.m. Coaches Reba McEntire and Chance the Rapper enlist the help of superstar mentors as their remaining artist holds nothing back during the playoffs. Tough decisions are made as each coach can only advance three artists. And So You Think You Can Dance on Fox, 9 p.m. tonight. In the new episode, Challenge Number 3, Movies, the dancers split into two groups and take on movie-themed challenges choreographed by Jamal Sims and Christopher Scott. And The Proof is Out There, Military Mysteries. This is on the History Channel at 10 p.m. An American-Korean war pilot is shot down and declared dead, but was he really captured and taken prisoner by the Soviets? A strange recording may have captured the real first woman in space dying on reentry, and is the U.S. training dolphins to kill. And finally, Deal or No Deal Island on NBC at 10 p.m. tonight. Power trumps money as the last five players strategically target each other and make crucial moves to advance to the final four. And we'll go down here to Ask Carolyn. Carolyn Hask. This is always a fun part of the second hour. And her headline is checking his phone the best way to prove he isn't lying anymore? And it's adapted from an online discussion, but Dear Carolyn, I found out my partner was lying to me about talking to ex-girlfriends and some other things. He gave me the passcode for his phone in an act of openness, but now has his phone with him all the time. I'm at a loss as to whether I ask him to check it or I'm just supposed to trust him going forward because he gave me the code. I also feel yucky checking this phone because it feels invasive, but on the other hand, I want to know if he's still lying to me. What should I do? And it's signed Trust Issues. Well, dear Trust Issues, he lied to you. You don't trust him. Those are the facts. Phone checks have never been and will never be the solution to these problems. Let's say you check his phone every day for the next 10 years. You find nothing. Will you trust him again? When, after month one of finding nothing, year three, year nine? But only if he's good about remembering your birthday. But you're racked with doubt and suspense. That is no kind of life, and again, no amount of phone checking will fix it. Only two things will. Number one, trusting the people in your life, or number two, trusting yourself to handle it if someone breaks that trust. Figure out whether and how you can get to this point with or without this particular known liar and proceed accordingly. And dear Carolyn, my girlfriend and I watch a lot of TV together to wind down from stressful jobs and trying to get ahead in our 20s. It's the only thing we fight about. We belong to the same gym, bike together, and even game together smoothly. With TV, though, she wants to stop me from having fun and being myself. Most shows are stupid, and we all know that, so I like to crack jokes. She hates this and says I'm ruining the shows for her. I can't watch TV and not do this. It's unnatural for me. But she doesn't care. She doesn't see that as ruining it for me by expecting me to just sit there like a dummy and watch in silence. Other girls I've dated have appreciated it and laughed along with me, and I miss that. This isn't something I want to break up over. Is there a compromise here? And the sign, want to be me. And dear want to be me, you're doing something she hates, justifying it, pitting her against other girls and permission shopping to keep her from being herself. Is this how you treat everyone you care about? And you can't not do this. Maybe get that checked. Either you zip it, watch TV separately, or compromise. You zip it for her shows and blab through yours. You choose these shows together. You try. You don't get to decide what we all know, then use that to insult her. Hello, by your definition, she watches TV like a dummy. She's entitled to hear dialogue. You're entitled to have opinions. So be respectful and figure it out. And you can email Carolyn Hacks at, and this is all lowercase, T-E-L-L-M-E at washpost.com. And follow her on Facebook at www.facebook.com. Again, lowercase, and / carolyn.hax. And yes, lowercase, or chat with her online at noon Eastern Time each Friday at www.washingtonpost.com. If I said that too quickly, or you had trouble, you didn't have a pencil handy, give us a call at Radio City at Radio Reading Services. They can't help you down at Radio City Music Hall. Give us a call, 513-487-4245. We'll get you the information you need. With that, we've got the horoscopes for this Monday, April 29, 2024. And we'll start with Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Cultivate your power of attraction. What do you want to acquire? Venus in Taurus increases your magnetic pull. And Taurus, April 20 to May 20. Have you glanced in the mirror today? You're looking good. Strut your stuff. Gemini, May 21 to June 21. There's no better company than yourself. Venus in Taurus invites you to go solo. And Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Appreciating the gift of friendship. Your social life brings you great joy while Venus is in Taurus. Belonging comes naturally. And Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd, it's not what you know, it's who you know. cultivating strong professional relationships is the secret to success. And Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd, an intellectual curiosity may entice you to study. Want to know more? Indulge your fancies with Venus in Taurus. And Libra, September 23rd to October 23, connecting with the sensuality of the body can be a transformative experience. Venus in Taurus encourages physical pleasures. So we'll come back up here to Scorpio, October 24, November 21. Relationships encounter a sweet spot. Venus in Taurus brings stability to all your connections. Commit to those you love. And Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21, create the good life. Are your routines sparking joy? Venus in Taurus says to implement daily practices that feel good. And Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th, let the good times roll. Venus in Taurus sprinkles her magic dust on you. And Aquarius, January 20 to February 18th, want to Z-H-U-Z-H up your sanctuary, zush up your sanctuary, I guess. You have a knack for redecorating with Venus in Taurus. Play with your space. And Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Pleasurable dialogues are abundant while Venus is in Taurus. Enjoy getting to know people. And with that, we're going to move on to, we've only got one. And Carolyn Grubbs, age 88 of Cincinnati, Ohio, passed on April 26th. Charles C. Young Funeral Home has the arrangements. And the service time on May 2nd is at 11:30 a.m. And the service location is Charles C. Young Funeral Home. Well, that's all we got for that today. So let's move on to, we got some great news articles for you. And Methodist Conference moves forward. Regionalization could allow U.S. Church to be more LGBTQ affirming. It's by Leon Adams of the Nashville Tennessean and the USA Today Network in Tennessee. And the dateline is Nashville, Tennessee. The United Methodist Church top legislative assembly passed key measures Thursday that could refashion the denomination's global structure and pave the way for greater regional autonomy on LGBTQ plus issues. Just days into a two-week gathering, more than 700 delegates from around the world convened last week in Charlotte, North Carolina, to determine legislation expected to shape the long-term future of the nation's largest mainline Protestant denomination. A proposal known as regionalization is among the highest profile of those decisions, in addition to the possible removal of anti-LGBTQ policies. The UMC has lost a quarter of its total U.S. churches in recent years due to splintering over church policy and theology, including LGBTQ plus rights. The overwhelming approval of key regionalization proposals, called petitions, by delegates Thursday is the first major sign of what many United Methodist leaders hope is a new chapter in the denomination's life. Are you willing to move forward in the spirit of hope and embrace a season of reformation? Are you committed to the revitalization of the United Methodist Church? Said New York Bishop Reverend Thomas Bickerton, outgoing president of the UMC Council of Bishops, in an April 23rd address to the conference's opening plenary session. We don't have any time for negative narratives and personal agendas. Friends, we got work to do. And guided by the principles of decolonization, regionalization seeks to address a long-standing power imbalance between United Methodist regional oversight in the U.S. versus that of other countries, mostly throughout Africa, the Philippines, and parts of Europe. The approach, in essence, eliminates a regional hierarchy that the Methodist Church originally created in 1939 to racially segregate black clergy and laity in the United States from the white population, according to the UMC General Commission on Archives and History. Delegates approved on Thursday 5 of 8 key petitions that constitute the regionalization proposal to the UMC General Conference. The most crucial of those 5 petitions was a constitutional amendment that effectively creates an entirely new system of regional authority worldwide, putting regional bodies in both the United States and in other countries in on equal footing. The measure passed with 78% of delegates voting in favor, exceeding the necessary 2/3 threshold for a constitutional amendment. Going forward, that constitutional amendment requires ratification from regional United Methodist bodies, a process that is expected to take a couple of years. On Thursday, UMC General Conference delegates passed other regionalization-related proposals by approving a consent calendar. Among those was a petition clarifying permission for regional church policy on marriage according to local customs and laws. Ahead of the Charlotte gathering, centrist and progressive United Methodist leaders and advocacy groups supported regionalization. Meanwhile, traditionalist advocacy groups opposed regionalization partly due to its relationship with other efforts to remove anti-LGBTQ restrictions. Pending delegates' decisions in the coming week, the U.S. Church may be able to move in a more LGBTQ plus affirming direction, while stricter policies on same-sex marriage and the organization of LGBTQ plus clergy remains in place for more conservative parts of the world. The regionalization approach is not without controversy in previously colonized areas. During a floor debate Thursday morning, Filipino delegate Reverend Jonathan Yolande used an ancient Greek term meaning a critical moment, saying, "Worldwide regionalization is the kairos moment of equity, contextual ministry, and simultaneously dismantling the vestiges of colonialism in the structure of the United Methodist Church." Yolande is part of a team and represents a region that has long supported regionalization. However, Zimbabwean delegate Forbes Matanga spoke against regionalization during a floor debate on Thursday because it divides the African continent into different regional bodies. We do agree that the current structure of the United Methodist is colonial, Matanga said, but politically speaking, this is disintegrating the voice of Africa. United Methodists in Africa have perhaps most fiercely debated regionalization, with different groups emerging to support the proposal and another instead supporting the conservative-led movement to leave the UMC or disaffiliate. There was one exception to Thursday's maneuvers aimed at holding the global denomination together. Some regional bodies received permission to exit. Those regional bodies, encompassing Russia, Belarus, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan, have long struggled to leave the denomination despite policies barring disaffiliation for churches outside the United States. In a compromise to resolve that struggle, 90% of the delegates approved a measure granting the bodies autonomy, which will take effect next year. And Russian Bishop Reverend Eduard Kigay expressed gratitude for his many positive experiences in the UMC in an address to delegates following the vote, repeating "Bolshoe spasibo," a Russian phrase expressing gratitude. Kigay added, "On behalf of our delegations from Eurasia, I want to express gratitude for supporting our autonomous status. We don't have any time for negative narratives and personal agendas. Friends, we got work to do." And this, the Reverend Thomas Bickerton, Bishop of the United Methodist Church, contributed to this article. So we're going to move along here. And we're going to move over to Nation and World. And the headline in Nation and World is Zelensky pleads for weapons. As Russia advances in the east, delivery awaits after months of delay. This is by Elaine Monahan, Dan Peleshuk, Tom Baumforth, and Hyunsu Yim, all of Reuters, and the dateline is Kiev. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky issued a fresh plea to the international community to hurry up and deliver more air defenses, start formal talks for his country to enter the European Union, and invite Ukraine to join NATO. Ukraine forces face a worsening position in the east and await delivery of U.S. weapons following the April 23rd approval by Congress of a $61 billion. There's no dot there, so it's $61 billion and packaging after months of delay. Yeah, that $61 billion is a whole lot more money than I said. Anyway, Zelensky has repeatedly pleaded for further air defense systems, particularly the Patriot system. Zelensky says he has just spoken with U.S. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and thanked Congress for passing the aid package, but added that Ukraine was working with all partners to achieve a speed of deliveries that would allow Ukraine to maintain its positions and disrupt Russia's war plans. We are still waiting for the supplies Ukraine was promised, he said in his nightly video address on Sunday. We are expecting those volumes and scope that can change the situation on the battlefield in Ukraine's interest. And he added, in my conversation with Mr. Jeffries, I underscored that Patriot systems are needed and as soon as possible. And on entry to the European Union, Zelensky said Ukraine had met all conditions for accession talks to start. And now the EU must meet its obligations. Ukraine, which has received strong support from most European nations since Russia launched a full-scale invasion of its territory 2 years ago, is a candidate to join the 27-member European Union, but the process will take years. On entry to the NATO military alignments, which U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said on April 4, Ukraine would join eventually. Zelensky said that every country that shares common values and is ready to defend them deserves an invitation to the alliance. He expressed optimism about the prospects for peace, referencing an upcoming peace summit set to take place in Switzerland, June 15 and 16. Russia is not invited to the gathering and has dismissed any such meeting as meaningless without Moscow's participation. The Ukraine's top commander said on Sunday Kyiv's outnumbered troops had fallen back to new positions west of three villages on the Eastern Front, where Russia had concentrated significant forces in several locations. The statement by Colonel General Alexander Sursky reflected Ukraine's deteriorating positions in the east that Kyiv hopes it can stabilize once it takes delivery of the United States weapons. The situation at the front has worsened, Sursky wrote on this Telegram app, describing the most difficult areas as west of occupied Marinka and northwest of Avdiivka, the town captured by Russian forces in February. Sursky says Kiev's troops had made up new positions west of the villages of Berdichi and Semenivka, both north of Avdiivka, and Novom Mikhailivka, further south near the town of Mariinka. In general, the enemy achieved certain tactical successes in these areas but could not gain operational advantages, he said, adding that Russia has committed four brigades to the assault, and fresh rested Ukrainian brigades were being rotated in those areas to replace units that had suffered losses, he said. His statement did not mention the status of Novobakhmutivka, another village near Berdichi that Russia's defense ministry said on Sunday its forces had captured. Moscow's troops have been slowly advancing since capturing the bastion town of Avdiivka, taking advantage of Ukrainian shortages of artillery, shells, and manpower. Online battlefield maps produced by open-source intelligence analysts suggest that they have advanced more than 9.5 miles in the direction of the village of Akhuritin since capturing Avdiivka. And further up the front, the Kyiv-held town of Chasiv Yar is a key emerging battleground because of its position on elevated ground that could serve as a gateway to the cities of Kostyantynivka, Slovenyansk, and Kramatorsk. Sirsky described Chasiv Yar and the village of Ivanovsky to its northeast as the hottest spots on that part of the front. Russian defense ministry said it has repelled Ukrainian counterattacks near Chasiv Yar. And the Kharkiv buildup? And what would provide a worrying development for Ukraine? Sirsky said his forces were closely monitoring an increase in the number of Russian troops in the area of Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. The northeastern city of 1.3 million, about 19 miles from the Russian border, has been hammered by airstrikes in recent months in what Kyiv has said is a deliberate effort by Moscow to make Kharkiv uninhabitable. Sirsky said there were no signs that Russia was directly preparing for an offensive in the north of the country. In the most threatening directions, our troops have been reinforced by artillery and tank units, he said. Zelensky said Ukrainian and U.S. teams were working on a specific text of a 10-year security agreement that would include weapons and other supports. A Ukrainian intelligence source told Reuters this week that Russia was conducting airstrikes on Ukrainian rail lines to disrupt the delivery of U.S. weapons to the front and to complicate military logistics. North Korea criticized the United States for supplying long-range missiles to Ukraine. State media KCNA reported on Monday, citing a statement from the Defense Ministry. The United States in recent weeks secretly shipped long-range missiles to Ukraine for use in its battle to fight off Russian invaders, a U.S. official said on April 24th. On Sunday, the director of the Department of Foreign Military Affairs and North Korea's Ministry of National Defense was quoted as saying in a statement, "The United States has secretly supplied long-range missiles to Ukraine, sparking off uneasiness and concern of the international community." The U.S. can never defeat the heroic Russian army and people with any latest weaponry or military support, the director said. Military ties between Pyongyang and Moscow are growing, which the U.S. and its allies see as escalating tensions in the Korean Peninsula. In what could provide a worrying development for Ukraine, Sirsky says his forces were closely monitoring an increase in the number of Russian troops in the area of Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. And with that, move over to investors less forgiving of earnings setbacks and greater emphasis put on solid corporate results. This is by Lewis Krauskauf of Reuters, and the dateline is New York City. Richly valued U.S. stocks are leaving investors with little tolerance for disappointment, raising the stakes ahead of a week in which two more technology and growth giants are set to report. Strong reports from Microsoft and Google parent Alphabet on Thursday helped propel the S&P 500 to its biggest weekly gain since early November following its first 5% pullback of the year. The S&P 500 is up about 7% in 2024 and some 24% since last October. But investors punished a disappointing forecast from Meta Platforms. The Facebook parent's stock tumbled over 10% on Thursday after its report. A sales warning saw shares of industrial bellwether Caterpillar fall 7%. And more broadly, S&P 500 companies that have topped analyst earnings estimates this quarter have seen their share outperformed by a median of just 0.2%. JP Morgan strategist said, by contrast, those that have missed earnings estimates have had their share lagged by a median of 4%, the biggest such an underperformance for misses in at least 8 years. An earnings report have been pretty good, said Rick Meckler, partner at Cherry Lane Investments, but anyone that missed in any way is paying a pretty heavy price. And more earnings are in store in the coming weeks from the so-called Magnificent Seven group of companies that drove markets higher last year. Amazon reports on Tuesday and Apple on Thursday, and on Wednesday, the Federal Reserve will release its latest monetary policy statement after concluding its two-day meeting. Some believe the market's nearly unabated run higher over the last 6 months has made investors less forgiving of earnings setbacks. The S&P 500 trades at 20 times forward earnings estimates, well above its historic average of 15.7, according to LSEG Datastream. We caution that potential earnings beats might not lead to equity upside during the results season, given the already strong equities run leading up to the earnings season and stretched positioning, the J.P. Morgan strategist said. Indeed, stock price reactions in the U.S. have been underwhelming so far. And share of Tesla surged 12% earlier in the week after the company said it would introduce new models by early 2025. Some investors attributed that to bargain hunting after a painful sell-off this year, which left the bar for good news much lower. And Tesla shares remain down over 30% for the year. And rising treasury yields could be another factor. Companies' projected future profits are more heavily discounted in analyst models when bond yields rise, as investors can now get a higher reward from risk-free government debt. The benchmark 10-year Treasury yield hit 4.74% this week, its highest level since early November, following more evidence of stronger-than-expected inflation. Overall, however, 78% of Standard & Poor's 500 companies have topped analyst earnings estimates for the first quarter, with earnings on pace for a 5.6% rise and from a year earlier, LSEG IBES said. Solid corporate results have grown more important as climbing treasury yields and stubborn inflation have raised uncertainty about stocks, says Chuck Carlson, Chief Executive Officer at Horizon Investment Services. Corporate profits are coming through at a level that can provide support for the market and kind of overcome some of the wobbliness in the inflation and the interest rate environment here, Carlson said. Earnings could take a back seat if bond yields keep marching higher or inflation dates remain stronger than expected. While investors do not expect any interest rate action from the Fed at next week's meeting, they will be listening for the central bank's insights on recent evidence of stronger than expected inflation. Expectations for interest rates cuts, which had been a key driver of the rally, have faded following signs of economic strength and sticky inflation. Futures markets on Friday showed investors pricing in just 35 basis points in rate cuts for 2024 compared to more than 150 prices in January. Earnings have been positive, but what the market's more concerned about, I would argue, is inflation and what the Fed's going to do about it, said Scott Wren, senior global market strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. And Amazon reports on Tuesday and Apple on Thursday. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve will release its latest monetary policy statement after concluding its two-day meeting. So we'll move along here. And UCLA skirmish, part of U.S. protesters. Students demand ceasefire in Gaza. This is by David Swanson and Rick McKay of Reuters. The dateline is Los Angeles, California. Protests at U.S. universities showing no sign of slowing over the weekend, with more arrests on campuses across the country and skirmishes between pro-Israeli and pro-Palestine demonstrators at UCLA, where a tent encampment was set up last week. As the size of the pro-Palestinian encampment at the University of California at Los Angeles expanded in recent days, counter-protesters have become increasingly vocal and visible on the campus, although both sides remained peaceful until Sunday. That changed when some demonstrators broke through a barrier that the school had set up to separate the two factions. Mary Osako, UCLA's vice chancellor for UCLA Strategic Communications, said members of both factions shoved one another and shouted slogans and insults, and in some cases traded punches. Pushing and shoving persisted for some time among pockets of demonstrators, but campus police armed with batons eventually separated the sparring groups. UCLA has a long history of being a place of peaceful protest, and we are heartbroken about the violence that broke out, Osako said in the statement. Chanting has ceased by around 3:30 p.m. local time, and pro-Palestinian protesters trickled back to the encampment, according to the Reuters photographer at the scene. Los Angeles police were not involved in quelling the disturbance, a representative of the campus said, and no arrests had been made. The dueling demonstrations on the UCLA campus involved at least some people from outside the university, according to an earlier statement by the university, which said it had allowed two groups on campus to express their views. And members of the Harriet Tubman Center for Social Justice plan to support the right of students to protest, according to the statement, while stand in support of Jewish students in partnership with Israeli American Council, plan to oppose hatred and anti-Semitism on campus. In the past 2 weeks, pro-Palestinian protests have spread to college campuses across the United States, triggered by the mass arrest of over 100 people at Columbia University more than a week ago. And since then, hundreds of protesters from California and Texas to Atlanta and Boston have been arrested as they emulated the encampments used by Columbia students to call attention to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Administrators, including those of Columbia, have said the protests as unauthorized, break school rules, disrupt learning, and have fostered harassment and anti-Semitism. Protesters are demanding a ceasefire in the war with Hamas and the divestment of university assets and companies involved with the Israeli military, and an end to U.S. military assistance to Israel. Student leaders have acknowledged that isolated incidents of anti-Semitism and harassment have occurred, but blame outsiders they say have sought to hijack their movement. The Columbia campus was peaceful on Saturday, a school spokesman said, but crackdowns took place at a handful of other campuses. More than 200 people were arrested at a handful of schools, including Washington University in St. Louis, and including 2024 Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein. They are sending in the riot police and basically creating a riot in an otherwise peaceful demonstration, so this is just shameful, Stein said. We've got this. Journalists face detention in Russia. Two allegedly part of extremist group with ties to Navalny. And this is from Reuters, and the dateline is Moscow, Russia. Courts in Russia placed two journalists in pretrial detention for 2 months on Saturday after state prosecutors accused them of taking part in the activities of an extremist organization founded by late opposition politician Alexei Navalny. Moscow's Basmani court said in a statement that one of the journalists, Konstantin Gabov, had prepared video and photographic material for a YouTube channel, Navalny Live, run by allies of Navalny, who died in an Arctic prison in February. It did not provide further details. A spokeswoman for the Navalny movement did not respond to a request for comment, and neither Gabov nor his lawyers could be reached for comment. Video journalist Sergey Karelin, who has in the past worked on the Associated Press, among others, and has dual citizenship with Israel, was detained in Russia's northern Murmansk region on Friday, the AP reported. AP said in a statement that it was very concerned by his detention and said, "We are seeking additional information." Karelin, like Gabov, is accused of preparing videos for the Navalny Live YouTube channel. Karelin could not be reached for comment. Gabov was shown in video footage pacing a courtroom cage with his arms folded. He has worked for various foreign and Russian news outlets in recent years, including Reuters and German broadcaster Deutsche Welle. Gabov will remain in pretrial detention until June 27th. The statement, released via the official Telegram channel for the Russian Capitol Court, said. And friends, that's all the time we have for the second hour today. My name is Dick Dowd, and I've enjoyed reading to you from the Cincinnati Enquirer this Monday, April 29, 2024.